This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark, brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
This is Robert Stark. I'm going to be discussing the YIMBY movement and the Alt Center and issues relating to California. And I'm joined here with Cartrell Payne, the Adventure Kid. Great talking to you, Cartrell.
Yep, it's your boy Cartrell Payne, the prince of pissing people off.
So, about things that would piss people off is this happened a while back. I think it was about 2 months ago, there was this transit bill by this California state senator from San Francisco. His name,
I heard about.
Yeah, his name is Scott Wiener. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it sucked that it didn't pass. You know, to me, California is the perfect example of limousine liberals. It's like they say one thing, but they do another.
Yeah, that's exactly true, and the whole housing issue is the best example of that. Just to kind of give an overview of what the transit bill would do is, say you have a housing development that would go up within a certain radius of a major transit hub, so that would be subways, light rail, or even rapid bus lines, and it would allow for constructions of higher density. I don't know the specific height limit, but it was a very controversial bill because it would allow for taller structures to go up in areas where there's single-family homes. And it wouldn't make it mandatory, but what it would do is a local city would lose their jurisdiction in blocking a development, and it would sort of centralize power to the state of California. And obviously some people would oppose the loss of local control, but it would basically stop the power of individuals who are trying to block housing in their cities.
Yeah, that's the problem with this whole housing thing in California. It's not like a traditional left-right type of thing, because on the one hand, you have the NIMBYs, who kind of sound almost conservative when they say they want local control and to preserve, you know, historic neighborhoods. And on the other side, you have the YIMBYs, who sound kind of like liberals when they say they want housing and all that. And the interesting thing I find about the YIMBY movement, primarily from reading Market Urbanism Report, is that the YIMBYs are pretty basically liberal on every single thing except housing. I mean, for example, Scott Bayer wrote an article about, I think about open borders and how that's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, I really want to get into how YIMBYism relates to immigration later on in the show, but basically, everyone in the YIMBY movement are, for the most part, including the liberals and the left-wing faction, but also the more libertarian faction of Market Urbanism, they're basically for open borders, which I'm against open borders, of course, but most YIMBYs are very pro-immigration.
Yeah. You know, if I could put a name on the YIMBY movement, I would say it's more left libertarian, or as I like to call it, Thaddeus Russell Republicans. In other words, they're basically pretty libertine.
Yeah, there's different political factions. So within the YIMBY movement, you have you have leftists who want to create more affordable housing for the poor. You also have the interest of real estate developers who have economic incentives for more development. You have the Silicon Valley has been financing the YIMBY movement because they want more housing for their workers. And then you have factions like Market Urbanism who are more libertarian. On the YIMBY side, you have like limousine liberals who live in single-family homes. You actually have left-wing NIMBYs. With the NIMBY movement, you have those people you were talking about, the limousine liberals. You have left-wing anti-gentrification activists, and these are people in working-class Hispanic communities in L.A. and the Bay Area, like the Mission District in San Francisco and Boyle Heights and Echo Park in L.A., and they don't want white hipsters coming into their community, so they're NIMBYs because they're anti-gentrification. You also have conservatives are pretty much irrelevant in California, but if you listen to conservative AM talk radio in California, conservatives, there are a lot of conservative NIMBYs.
Well, my thing with the whole, well, let me just give my opinion on the whole gentrification thing. It's kind of mixed because it's like, yeah, I can kind of understand, you know, if you're a traditional neighborhood like Harlem and there's a lot of history behind it, I can understand that. But at the same time, it seems to me that most of these neighborhoods that resist gentrification tend to be shitty places that nobody else wants to live. I mean, like, look at Boyle Heights. I think the Mexican mafia basically controls the entire area.
They're terrible places. Boyle Heights has a lot of crime, and there's been radical leftists in Boyle Heights actually doing stuff like vandalizing art galleries and coffee shops. And a lot of these places are pretty miserable places with lots of crime that are not suitable. I mean, not just for, say, upper-class people, but even just regular working-class people.
I mean, yeah, you know, because in the news, whenever I say, you know, whenever I hear, like, the mainstream media say, local community bravely resists, you know, because in everything today, we always got to put brave in front of everything, bravely resists gentrification, but on the news, they never mention that the south side of Chicago has had, like, 200-something murders this year. They just say, you know, how dare these people come in and try to make the neighborhood not seem like a shithole and open up coffee houses. This neighborhood is historic. And it's like, so what the fuck is that supposed to mean? Who gives a fuck if it's historic or not? I mean, if somebody is getting shot, I don't care how good the building looks, it's still a terrible neighborhood.
With Memphis, where you live, Memphis is known for having a lot of crime. Has there been gentrification into the high crime areas?
Well, I guess to a certain extent, yes. Like the neighborhood I live in, you know, Corns Avenue, it's mostly black, but we're near the university area, so we have a lot of white people that come through or ride through, or sometimes they even live there. We got a lot of white hipsters on bikes, you know, doing bike races in the neighborhood. You know, a lot of college students who like to walk through from time to time. But along with that, you also have a lot of ghetto people, a lot of gang members, a lot of drug dealers and hustlers, a few pimps here and there, and a few regular working class people like plumbers and teachers and police officers and people like that. So it's kind of a mixed neighborhood, but it's slowly gentrifying. And plus, not to mention, we also have like a, right next to where I live, there's like a, what's the thing called where you get, a bike share program. Yeah, a bike share program.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of this. So there's the whole debate about gentrification, and then the other issue in these major cities, such as L.A., New York, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., is there's a strong divide between the upper-class areas and the lower-class areas, and there's not a strong, viable housing for the middle class.
Well, I mean, you've got a point. The problem is a lot of things, really. It's regulations for one, and on the other side, it's taxes on another side, and on another side, it's the rising cost of living. Like, for example, you know, I've heard people from New York say, you know, New York, you know, back in the day, sure, the crime rate was terrible, but on the Lower East Side, it would cost like, what, $500 a month to rent, like, an apartment, and, you know, before gentrification came around, and, you know, and they said, sure, the city had a high crime rate, but the good thing about the high crime rate is that you could get a lot of cheap, affordable housing. And I also read another book about the punk rock movement, and, you know, the guys from Devo were basically talking about how they were able to buy a mansion for extremely cheap because Cleveland in the 70s was kind of, you know, due to deindustrialization, was kind of dying as a city. So as a result, you know, a lot of the housing was pretty cheap.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. So there are these trade-offs. So with a lot of these NIMBYs who are limousine liberals, they tend... So you were talking about how the NIMBYs tend to be very pro-immigration, but a lot of these liberal... The YIMBY side is generally pro-immigration. The liberal NIMBY side, who are wealthy liberals who own single-family homes, they also tend to be pro-immigration. If you're a...
But the thing is, if you're
a pro-immigration YIMBY, there is some degree of consistency in your ideology. To be pro-immigration and to be a NIMBY is utterly insane, because what's basically happening in California is we have this massive shortage of housing, and there's a very limited amount of new development within urban areas getting built. I mean, there's stuff getting built in the far out exurbs, but that's not sustainable. But on the other hand, California is having massive levels of immigration, and there's also the issue of a lot of wealthy people from China are buying up real estate in California, and they're just leaving these homes empty, and that's also driving up real estate. So the combination of high levels of immigration and restrictions on housing is really exacerbating the problem of a limited supply relative to the demand.
Yeah, you know, I mean, California, let's be honest, at this point, it has pretty much gone downhill. I mean, I'm surprised nobody has gone all, you know, Michael Douglas from Falling Down yet and just went crazy and started shooting up the place. I mean, that movie was a warning of the future. The warning was, California, if you don't get your shit under control, this is what's gonna happen to the white working class.
Yeah, that's a great film, and it's one of those films that has a very subversive message that occasionally gets released in Hollywood.
But yeah, I mean, you know, and the solutions are like so simple. I mean, I don't know what's in the future for California. You guys have a 79-year-old a mayor who's probably suffering from some type of Alzheimer's.
Oh, you mean the governor Jerry Brown?
You know, and the sad part is, I actually used to like Jerry Brown. I mean, you know, I thought that back in the day he had some good ideas, but now he's just gone full circle and become like a sellout establishment Democrat.
So I talked about the hypocrisy of pro-immigration limousine liberals. Do you know who writes a lot about that? Is Steve Saylor on the UNS Review. He's written about Malibu and places like Palo Alto in the Bay Area, how a lot of the liberal elites tend to be like the most extreme NIMBYs. So if you're interested in that subject matter, I'd suggest looking up Steve Saylor's articles.
Yeah, and you know, this has just reminded me of something. One time I was watching this, well, this is actually important to the conversation, but you should watch this show. It's called Go Set a Watchman, and it talks about how in the 80s, you know, this mayor or this I forgot what his name was, but he tries to do like mixed youth development in like you know, in Yonkers, and you know, it didn't go too well. The rich people in the neighborhood, they didn't want the poor black people living with them. Yonkers is its own city. It's kind of like a suburb of, like, you know, New York. You know, kind of like how everybody thinks Compton is a part of L.A., but it's really not.
So, yeah, that's an interesting issue because I've actually heard NIMBYs say that... I've heard YIMBYs say that NIMBYs are motivated by racism, and on the limousine liberal side of the NIMBYs is those people they're extreme hypocrites, and I went over that already. With the conservative, the more conservative kind of like older middle class white NIMBYs, a lot of them were probably Trump voters. I was reading an article over on Urbanize, the site called Urbanize LA, and they were talking. The writer who wrote this was a NIMBY, and he was obviously very liberal and pro-immigration. And his argument was that the NIMBY movement that got started in LA in the 1980s was a reaction to these new apartment buildings going up that were mostly catering to immigrants from Asia, Latin America, and the Middle East. So, there is a level of implicit whiteness in the sense that a lot of older middle-class white people equate more housing and more apartments with more immigration and more demographic change. And I don't think, I personally don't consider that racist. I think it's totally rational to oppose immigration and massive demographic change. But if you're coming from that perspective, it's not really beneficial to, say, middle-class white people to try to block housing, because what's happening is there's not enough new housing getting built, and there's all these new people coming in, so you're seeing this massive exodus of the white middle class out of California. And I mean, not just the white middle class, people of all ethnic backgrounds are living in California.
Yeah, because, you know, the black people are moving out of California, too. Like, I don't know if you've heard about this thing called, like, the new migration or whatever.
Oh, but, you know, yes, I've heard of that.
It's basically about black people, you know, from the North and the Midwest and the West Coast moving to other parts of the country. Now, there's kind of a reason for that. First, it's cold as hell in the Midwest. And second, you know, there's high crime, and third, you know, the regulations or taxes are way too much. I mean, seriously, have you seen Chicago's teacher pension? If they don't get a hold of it that quick, their whole state is probably going to go bankrupt.
Yeah, a lot of blacks are leaving California. A lot of it is economic reasons, affordable housing. A lot of the working class jobs that were traditionally done by blacks in California are being done by illegal immigrants. One other factor is in ghetto areas like South Central is the Mexican gangs are going out and attacking blacks. I think that's a major factor too. But it's mostly blacks who are, say, working class to maybe middle class that are leaving. Like the extreme black proletariat, the people like at the very bottom, are more likely to stay in California, and that's probably because places like the South don't have a strong social safety net.
Well, yeah, but this is why I wanted to talk with you, you know, about the alt center, but yeah, you know, it's kind of like there's like no perfect state to live in America. It's like, sure, in Mississippi, you can own a gun and it's pretty easy to own a business. But God help you if you... But God help you if you try to smoke weed or look at pornography or, you know, do anything that's actually fun.
But I've also heard that the police are really big assholes in a lot of those southern states. Is that true?
Well, yeah, but that's pretty much true anytime you have a small country sheriff. I mean, I'm sure there are pretty a lot. I mean, you live in California, so I'm sure the LAPD is considered assholes by many people who live in California.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, I was also going to mention California. And in California, I mean, sure, you've got good unions, good safety net, all that other stuff. You know, you guys aren't too socially conservative. You know, porn is cool, weed is cool. But gosh, if you have a gun, or if you're an open Christian, or if you're somebody who believes that maybe the Communist Party wasn't a good thing, it's like you're basically like considered to be nothing. Like, for example, try to go to West Hollywood wearing a shirt that says Straight Pride while holding a gun and smoking like a cigarette. You'd get arrested by the LAPD so bad.
Oh, yeah, for
while
sure.
While if you do the same thing in Mississippi, you know, if you're smoking a cigarette with a gun in your pocket, with a shirt that says Straight Pride, nobody would give a shit. Or if you went to Mississippi and said, you know, wore a shirt that said fuck Donald Trump in like a small town in Mississippi while smoking a blunt, you would get thrown to the ground by a sheriff so quick. So it's like nowhere you go in the U.S. is like a place where there's any freedom.
I did notice that when I was in Las Vegas, it's pretty laissez-faire culturally. Like you can see a flamboyant homosexual and a drag queen. And you also see, like, rednecks with Confederate flags, and everyone manages to coexist.
Well, I mean...
But that's also taking into account that that's a tourism destination, so that's... It's not really so much a community, it's a place where people come there from L.A., they come there from the South, they come there from all over the place, all over the world.
Yeah, Las Vegas is, like, one of those places where, you know, most of the people who live there aren't actually... you know, like natives or whatever, you know, kind of like Los Angeles, you know, that old stereotype that, you know, young girls from the Midwest and the South come there to like be actors and they end up being porn stars.
Oh yeah.
I'm not sure how much of that is true, but I have read a lot of books on porn stars, and a lot of them seem to come from other states or from other cities like Houston, Texas, or Memphis, Tennessee, or some podunk, or some small town like Buttfuck, Alabama.
Well, that's definitely true, because there's this documentary called Hot Girls Wanted about the porn industry, and it's from a feminist perspective, but a lot of the stuff in there is pretty much accurate, and it's a documentary just telling the stories of these girls. And pretty much, basically, all of them are from the Midwest or the South in small towns.
Wow, really? So no girls are native to the West Coast is there. It's just all the porn stars are from, like, Chicago or from Atlanta. Nowhere else?
Yeah, well, not even so much Chicago, like small towns in Texas and the Midwest.
Yeah, but I've heard lately Florida has been, you know, competing with you guys on the porn game.
That's true, because what happened is... L.A. passed an ordinance requiring condoms in porn, and that really harmed the porn industry in L.A.
Yeah, you know, these days they're either shooting in Las Vegas or, like, Florida, you know, Miami and all that.
So, with the whole housing issue is a lot of these white conservative types that I was talking about, the kind of they're a declining demographic in California, but they tend to be pretty strong NIMBYs, especially, I mean, some of them actually are pro-development when it comes to suburban sprawl, and they think owning a home way out in the middle of nowhere, or way out in the exurbs is the ideal, and they're very hostile towards things like mass transit and new urbanism. And a lot of these people, I mean, they're not going to support the alt-right, but there is this kind of implicit whiteness to them, in the sense that a lot of, I mean, I'm talking about people who are Trump supporters or people who maybe like Breitbart and Fox News. But the thing is, let's just say hypothetically, we were to dramatically reduce immigration levels, but then at the same time, simultaneously, dramatically increase the housing supply within urban LA. It basically, we would see a white population boom that would be comparable to what we saw in the 1950s. You would see a lot of people from the Midwest who want to move to California, but they can't afford it. They would move here. You would see white millennials being able to start families. And it wouldn't just benefit white people, of course. It would benefit people aspiring to be middle class of all ethnic backgrounds. But I don't really see the NIMBY position as being beneficial to white middle class interests if your objective is to grow a strong white middle class in California?
Well, personally, I think of myself as being pro-development, but also at the same time, I realize that, you know, not everything fits everybody. I mean, there can be like a common ground where we can have like, you know, historic preservation while at the same time also you know, having like lots of development like the NIMBYs want. I mean, some cities have managed to pull this off. Like, for example, you know, Houston, it has a lot of its historic buildings left, but at the same time, there's always new buildings going up. And, you know, and unlike in California, nobody is butthurt if a skyscraper is built in a neighborhood.
Houston's not really, I mean, they are built, I'm sure they're building high-rises, but they have some of the worst suburban sprawl, so I don't know if that's the best model. I don't really think
Well, that depends on if you think sprawl is a good thing or a bad thing. In some cases, it can be good, but in some cases, it can be bad. It really all depends on, you know, how much of it is.
To the degree is what you're saying, but the thing is, I'm all in favor of things like historic preservation and wilderness conservation, even having a green belt. I think those are great things, and I think there is, I mean, I'm not a libertarian who says let's just allow everyone to do what they want with their own property. I think the state serves a role in having sane zoning regulations, protecting wilderness, protecting historic architecture. My main problem with NIMBYs is not so much like the concern about the environment and historic architecture. That's totally rational. But in a lot of cases, you'll have a ugly strip mall or a giant parking lot, and say a developer will propose like just like a 5-story mixed-use development, and the local NIMBYs will be totally opposed to that. So I don't even think it's necessary to destroy historic architecture or to destroy wilderness. You just need to go to these areas that are major transit hubs, invest more in mass transit, and then just places like LA especially, and even parts of the Bay Area, they're just full of all these parking lots and ugly strip malls. And
not to mention that you guys not to mention that it's pretty hard to walk around the city of LA. But that being said, you know, I lived in Houston for a while, and you know, I have to admit, although, you know, it had like some good skyscrapers and everything, it was hard for me to walk around because the city was built, you know, for a person who owned a car, and you know, I didn't own one, so I almost got hit by cars like a whole bunch of times.
I've never been to Houston, so I can't really comment on that. Atlanta's a city, I'm not sure if you've been there. It's known for having a lot of really bad suburban sprawl, but I would like to visit there because in their downtown area, they have this really cool futuristic self-contained city designed by the architect John C. Portman.
This sounds cool.
Yeah, back to what I was saying is it's not even necessary to destroy wilderness or historic architecture. You can basically within a place like LA, you can just build tons of skyscrapers over strip malls and parking lots. And then within the suburbs, people don't really need to abandon the suburbs completely, but the solution is just to make them more livable, more walkable, build more parks, turn strip malls into sort of like walkable mixed-use developments. So there's a lot of solutions. And I think another problem with the NIMBY movement is another problem with the YIMBY movement is that they disregard aesthetics, and a lot of people become NIMBYs as a reaction to a lot of ugly apartment buildings that went up in, say, the 1990s. I think if you put out a great aesthetic vision that really inspires people, that shows a way to increase housing and do so in an aesthetically pleasing manner, I think you'll get a lot more support. So my biggest critique of the NIMBY movement is their attitude is like, we're just in a housing crisis and aesthetics and architecture don't matter at all.
Well, yeah, I can kind of understand where you're coming from. You know, I read Market Urbanism Report, and, you know, they really haven't talked about aesthetics that much. They're pretty much utilitarian. But, you know, what I like about City Journal, if you just ignore all the neocon bullshit on City Journal and just focus on the parts where they talk about housing and aesthetics, they make a lot of sense.
Oh, City Lab. Is it City Lab or City Journal? There's a site called City Lab.
I'm talking about City Journal, but yeah.
Okay. But there's also a site called City Lab, and they're similar in this sense. So they're part of the Atlantic, and they're very SJW, very politically correct, very pro-immigration. But at the same time, they do talk a lot about promoting urbanism with concerns for aesthetics. So if you're willing to just kind of hold your nose and kind of push aside a lot of that kind of SJW-type nonsense, I would say City Lab is a site worth looking at. What were you going to say about City Journal?
Well, yeah. Well, that's the exact same thing with City Journal. As long as you ignore all the neocon bullshit and, you know, sucking George W. Bush's and Donald Trump's dick, you can basically get a whole bunch of stuff on urbanism. Because when they're not jerking off John McCain, like, for the 5th millionth time, they're actually talking about good architecture. Why does transit suck in California?
Well, basically what happened is cities like New York on the East Coast, Boston, obviously European cities, they were built up before the automobile. So those cities are very compact. City like LA was is very spread out. It was built up around the automobile. So those New York's transit system, their subway system is very old. I think it was, I'm not 100% sure. I think it was started in the 1890s, and they have excellent transit. LA's transit system is fairly new, and they're starting to build more subways. But the problem with LA is that it's so spread out. So even if they successfully complete a subway line from downtown LA to the beach, it's going to probably take like an hour to ride. They do have that this new Expo Rail from downtown to Santa Monica, and it's a big step in the right direction, but it still takes a fairly long time. So those are the problems is that LA is a much newer city to be urbanized, and it was built up around the automobile. As far as the San Francisco Bay Area goes, San Francisco is a lot more compact. and their transit system is significantly better than LA's, but it's still nothing compared to the East Coast or to Europe or to Asia. But for the most part, I mean, a lot of these newer Sunbelt cities have really lousy transit.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, crap, I can't really name. Well, you know, Portland actually has a good transit system.
I've never been to Portland, but I heard they have a great streetcar.
Yeah, it's actually not shitty.
And also, yeah, the city in the Czech Republic, I stayed in Brno, they don't have a subway, but they do have a streetcar system, and it works pretty good. I spent most of my time in the city center, so I didn't really use it, but it works better than what we have in America.
Yeah, you know, I was gonna ask you, why do you still live in California? Like, why don't you move to like Forks, Washington, or something like that?
Well, I like it here. I would consider moving if I got a job opportunity somewhere else. I can't really think of where I'd live. I wouldn't want to live in the South or the Midwest. The Pacific Northwest is beautiful, but I get depressed in gloomy weather. I guess if I had to leave California, I might consider Colorado because I love the mountains. But at the same time, Denver is fairly urban and walkable, and Boulder is also a great place. But the thing is, Colorado is sort of on its way to becoming the next California. But that's the only state I could see myself living in outside of California.
What about the East Coast?
I've never been to the East Coast. I don't think I like the weather there, but I'd have to travel there more and get a better idea.
Yeah, but you know, I love the Pacific Northwest. And that's where I want to move. You know, this might sound weird, but I actually like when it rains a lot and when it's gloomy outside. It gives you know, kind of a Norris feel to the environment around you. You know, sometimes I just think about wearing like a trench coat like Cowboy Bebop and just walking down the street in rainy, you know, Portland or Seattle, or maybe some small town in the Pacific Northwest while smoking, you know, like a cigar or a cigarette. That sounds cool.
Oh, yeah, kind of like a film noir.
Yeah.
I like the weather, actually, in the San Francisco Bay Area because you have this contrast with the fog coming in on the coast, but it still gets pretty hot and dry in the summer in the inland parts. But I don't know if I'd want to live in a... I like the rain, but I also like the contrast with the hot, dry weather. I wouldn't want to live somewhere where it's raining and gloomy nonstop.
I want to move to Forks, Washington State. I still want to achieve my dream of going to the Pacific Northwest and yeah, but, you know, I want to move to Forks, Washington State. You know, I've just always kind of liked the Pacific Northwest, just, you know. And plus, you know, Forks, Washington, it has great beaches, you know. Sure, it rains a lot, but...
If you've watched that show, have you ever watched Twin Peaks that takes place in Washington, in the mountains, in forest?
Oh, I watched one episode.
You watched one episode of Twin Peaks.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, I'll get around to it when I feel like it, but, you know, I keep holding it off, and, you know, it's like, man, I should really watch this.
Twin Peaks was a show I basically watched the entire series, but for the most part, I don't watch a lot of TV. You were asking me why I stay in California, and California, with all its problems, I would say that if you're rich, it's actually one of the best places to live.
Yeah, if you're rich. Too bad the vast majority of people on this planet aren't rich.
I mean, I like certain aspects of L.A., but L.A. is just, it's too much. It just has, like, way too much sprawl. If I had a lot of money, I would say that the San Francisco Bay Area would be my favorite place to live because San Francisco is my favorite city. Just as far, I mean, there's plenty of things I dislike about San Francisco, but just purely putting aside all that, just as far as just the architecture and the urban landscape and the natural beauty there, and even Berkeley is fairly urban and walkable, and it probably has the most spectacular natural beauty for pretty much any urban area. LA has the Santa Monica Mountains, and we have the San Gabriel Mountains, which are maybe about an hour away, and we get snow. San Francisco is near the Redwoods, and you also have some great places like Mount Diablo if you go inland, and then you have the wine country, and then you can take like a weekend trip to the Sierras and go to Tahoe or Yosemite. So what I really like about San Francisco is just the contrast of basically it's San Francisco is the closest you get to feeling like you're in New York City on the West Coast, but it's just sort of the contrast of the urbanism and the natural beauty is what I like about it. It's just, you basically have to be a multimillionaire to have a high standard of living there.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to say this. You know, in black media, something I've been noticing, at least for the last couple of months, people have been holding up Maxine Waters like she's some type of hero, and I'm like, you people can't be serious. This is the new black leader we're supposed to respect. This lady was probably the most incompetent of all the California politicians, which when you really look at the record is actually saying something. I mean, she's a buffoon, and you think she's going to lead black people to this future?
I mean, she's a total joke. She's ridiculous.
I get it. I don't like Trump either, but at the same time, I'm not a gullible fool who's going to listen to a black leader just because she has a D behind her name. And, you know, that's the thing that I dislike about my own community, the black community. Don't get it twisted. I'm a very proud black man. And at some point, and sometimes I am a black nationalist, but at the same time, it's like, it seems to me that black people will vote for anybody who has the word Democrat behind their name. I mean, seriously, you could be Charles Manson as long as you had Democrat behind your name. I guarantee you, you would get votes. Look at Marion Barry. He did literally nothing to help the black people of Washington, D.C., and he smoked crack, but somehow he still got elected by 80%, depressingly enough.
Yeah, that's just the problem. I don't really see black people voting Republican in large numbers, but I think the
why would they?
I totally agree with you. I don't blame them. But I think the solution is for blacks to run candidates who are more like, I don't know if you'd call them conservative Democrats, but they're Democrats who are pro working class, socially centrist, and against mass immigration, against outsourcing. So if you could get like black Democrats who are like that, I think that would be a great thing.
I mean, yeah, you know, and the sad part of thing, and the sad thing about black the sad thing about minority politics in general in America is this. I mean, we're basically stuck between a rock and a hard place. I mean, on the one hand, sure, the Democrats might be assholes, but at the same time, they're the ones who are making sure black people have welfare and, you know, that we have good union jobs and to make sure that our working places are safe and all that. On the other hand, you have Republicans saying, she's a welfare cheat and a welfare queen, and, you know, and they're always defending like these cops who kill innocent people, which I find the most egregious thing.
So we basically do need a sort of alt-center in this country, and we started this show off on the whole sort of NIMBY versus YIMBY debate, and a lot of those problems are tied in with the flaws of liberals and conservatives. I have my own vision for an alt-center, but it might be different than your vision for an alt-center. but it would obviously have to be a kind of a big tent movement. So my idea for an alt center would incorporate things like new urbanism, things we talked about like walkable communities and environmentalism, a strong support for a middle class, sane economic policies, things like alternative economics, possibly a basic income, maybe some economics policy, either distributism or state capitalism, some Swipple cultural values, the positive aspects of that, probably on cultural issues, probably centrist, not obviously rejecting the crazy cultural left and SJW culture, but at the same time not super culturally conservative. So my idea of an alt-center is going to be probably more Eurocentric, but coming from a black background, you could have a black take on an alt-center. So what I'm saying is my idea of an alt-center would address sort of more white middle-class identity politics, but you could also have an alt-center that addresses black issues as well. How would you, Cartrell, describe what you would like to get out of an alt-center?
Well, my thing is, I'm more of a socially conservative independent. So my thing would be more like social conservatism and I guess you could say economic centrism.
Yeah, I would say that on economics, I'm probably centrist to maybe center-left, and I'm centrist on cultural issues, but that's just going by your basic political compass test. When I take the political compass test, I come out a centrist, but I just view that as being way too simplistic. You have to look at each issue's on a case-by-case basis. So you would say that you're basically you're socially conservative and an economic centrist. So you sound to me, you kind of sound a lot like an old school Democrat.
Well, I guess you could say that. Like, I guess you could say I'm a Southern Democrat without the racism.
Oh, kind of like Huey Long?
Well, I was going to say George Wallace, but yeah.
So George Wallace, but without the anti-black aspects.
Or, you know, George Wallace in his later years when he changed.
But that's interesting about the South is the old school Southern politicians were, they were racial, but their economic policies were more populist. These new politicians out of the South is they're like conservatives in the sense that they'll say stuff like race doesn't matter and we're all Americans, but then their economic policies screw over the working class. So if you had to choose, would you rather have George Wallace or one of these newer Southern Republicans like Nikki Haley from South Carolina?
Oh, Lord. Well, I'm trying to choose between strychnine and cyanide, but...
But you get what I'm saying.
Oh, man, I wonder who is an old... I'm just going to take a third option. I would pick William Jennings Bryan, or maybe, like, there was this guy who was, like, the mayor of Buffalo for a long time. He was pretty socially conservative. I forgot what his name is.
I know about William Jennings Bryan. I'm not quite sure about the mayor of Buffalo, but Huey Long and those people, they were all like the product
Robert
of
Robert Downey Jr.
Oh,
I mean,
right. Not Robert Downey. No.
Martin Downey Jr. Martin Downey Jr.
Right. Those people, they were a product of the kind of early 20th century populist movement. And the old center is obviously going to be different than the early 20th century populist movement. It's going to be more future-oriented, but I think we can borrow upon those people for inspiration and influence.
I mean, yeah. You know, I just hope things in America... Well, yeah, I just hope there's a bright new future for America. You know, I always hate the media when they say, oh, he's a self-made man. It's like, was he really self-made? I mean, look at Ted Turner, for example. The guy, when his father died, he inherited a company. And I think his father left him like a couple of million dollars like Trump's father did. It's like, this guy never had to work hard for anything in his life. He went to an exclusive school for the children of businessmen. You know, he was star of on either the football team or the track team. I mean, and not to mention, he's like a billionaire now. He lives in an exclusive mansion in probably the most wealthiest part of Atlanta. And you know, they sit, and you know, you have these sellout conservatives saying, you know, instead of passing, taxes on the rich, we should appreciate them for being so rich. It's the poor, those parasites we need to worry about, not these rich businessmen. And I'm like, really? You're worried about the guy who got millions of dollars from his father and lives in a mansion in Atlanta while there's people eating out of trash cans in Compton? It's like, man, fuck you. Okay, that's bullshit. You know what? You know, fuck the Republican Party. Fuck the Democrats. Fuck all those guys. It's like, if you say that, you're a piece of shit. You know, I hear Steven Crowder and Ben Shapiro say that. I'm like, you guys are pieces of shit. You know, you're pieces of shit. You like sucking the rich man's dick and the white man's dick so much. Go fuck yourself.
That's the problem is with conservatives. The alt-right likes to use the term cuckservative to describe a white person who puts other groups' racial interests first. But also a cuckservative, my version of a cuckservative is a middle-class white conservative who supports cutting taxes for all these elites who support policies that are disastrous for themselves. And I guess I think the blogger Ryan England, who calls himself alt-left, he coined the term class cuck, but do you think that's accurate?
Well, yeah. You know, to expand on that, that's also one of the reasons why I don't like any black conservative. To me, it just seems like all black conservatives are basically sellouts. They all say we should cut welfare and, you know, get rid of lunch programs for, you know, inner city black kids. And they always agree with the white man whenever a black person is killed. They like, oh, yes, Mr. White person. Yes, he was a thug. It doesn't matter if the police officer was, like, fired before for, impersonal conduct. He's a white police officer. We should all respect him. It's like, oh, my God, you guys need to stop sucking the police officer's dick so much. It's like, really? I bet you wouldn't say that if that happened to you. I bet if you got your ass beat by the cops a couple of times, maybe you would have a different perspective on the police. You know what? We should just have sponsor it. You know, there should be a law passed for all those people who defend, like, the rich corporations and defend corrupt police officers. You know what we should do? We should send them to live on the streets and make them eat from trash cans. We should let the LAPD hit them in the head like a whole bunch of times. And I bet you once they come back, their whole perspective will change.
So that is the problem, you're saying, what you dislike about conservatives. What do you hate the most about liberals? I guess we talked about this at the beginning of the show. So, I think, just to get back to the basics, is with liberals, a place like, liberals claim to be concerned about income inequality, but just a place like, California has the worst income inequality, and Liberals are pretty useless. I mean, there's some good things about the left from an ideologically standpoint, but I'd say in practice that the left is pretty worthless.
Yeah, you know, the thing I hate about the left is the degeneracy and the fact that that's all they're basically all a bunch of fucking degenerates now. It's like, for example, I think one time a porn star came to speak at, like, a Democratic National Convention one time. I'm like, okay, it's pretty much over for the Democratic Party now. I mean, they used to be the party of common people, but let's be honest. Nobody in Iowa is going to vote for a party that lets a porn star who openly advocates abortion speak at the convention. Nobody's going to vote for that. I mean, come on. Come on, man. That's not going to happen.
What is your general opinion of the alt-right?
Well, on one hand, I agree on with, you know, the idea of white nationalism. I say the idea because real-life white nationalists tend to be assholes. I mean, they do. They're always saying nigger this and nigger that, and once we get all the power, we're going to kill all the niggers, the Mexicans, and the Jews, and deport everybody. And it's like, bro, please, you're not going to do any of that bullshit. I mean, you guys tried to fight at Charleston, and you got your ass kicked. I mean, come on, bro. Stop acting like you're the Fourth Reich or some bullshit like that. I mean, you know, I think it's just pathetic, basically. You know, I read some alt-right sites like Occidental Dissent, and sometimes I read the comments for fun, and I'm like, oh, my God. These people really have nothing better to do all day except complain about black people. It's like, Jesus Christ. I actually feel sorry for some of these people. I didn't know people could be that fucking pathetic.
In what regards do you view their views as rational?
Well, I mean, if you mean as rational? Well, I mean, it's rational to love your own race and people and everything. And, you know, it's rational to be concerned about crime and income inequality and all that stuff. But on the, and, you know, immigration. But on the other hand, these guys take it way too far. I mean, way too far. What makes me laugh whenever the conservatives defend police officers or defend corporations. You know, because it's like, dude, you say you want tax cuts, but Facebook is like a liberal company.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at, is the whole concept. I call conservatives or cuck-servatives in the sense that they support tax cuts for powerful, influential liberals like Mark Zuckerberg or even George Soros. So we are getting close to the end of the show. To kind of wrap things up, let's kind of summarize things. So is there anything else you'd like to add about the alt-center?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it'd be a great idea, you know. You know, I mean, only if we could get a website up or something. But, yeah, I mean, I think we should really get out there and tell people what we're about. You know, kind of like start a movement.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think the best way to describe the alt-center is pragmatic dissidence.
Yeah.
And as far as the earlier discussion on the YIMBY movement, is there anything else you'd like to add about that particular issue?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, I think it's silly that, you know, that you have a bunch of grown people who are basically screaming at each other like children at the whole NIMBY versus YIMBY debate. It's like, people, calm down. It's a fucking house. You're acting like, I mean, with the whole YIMBY thing, they were acting like neo-Nazis were going to march down the streets. That's what I hate about California. A bunch of limp-wristed, limousine liberal idiots who think everything that's even to the right of Mao Zedong is bad.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And the thing about California is it could be, I mean, I don't know if it can still be saved, but it had the potential of being one of the best places on Earth if it had the right leadership, but it's just really fallen apart, and it's sad because it's such a beautiful place, and the people in power in politics and culture, media, business have made some really bad decisions, and we see so many different problems, but it's not just California. A lot of these problems are spreading to the rest of the country, and I really do think that we do need some kind of alt-centrist movement, but it is going to have to become like a big tent. And there's going to be a lot of people who disagree, so you have your perspective on things, and there might be people who might strongly disagree on other issues, so it is going to have to be kind of a big tent movement. And even in these movements, like the thing is, a movement like the alt-right, it's much more narrow. And you still have all this infighting, so I think to build a successful big tent political movement, you do need to be pragmatic and have a wide variety of opinions. But you don't just need a wide variety of opinions, you need some basic core principles that you all agree on, but then there has to be room for nuance in order to attract people with, maybe in some cases, you might have a diverging opinion.
Yeah, me too. I think that's great. You know, debate is always a good thing.
Since we started off the show on the NIMBY movement, do you think that combining, say, immigration restriction with the YIMBY movement is... That's obviously, those two issues are compatible because of the points I made earlier, but do you see the combination of immigration restriction and NIMBY policies as a component, and things like new urbanism as a component of the alt center?
Well, to be honest, I'm more of a market urbanist than a new urbanist. I think sometimes the new urbanists are too restrictive. But I think, you know, a YIMBY movement with an immigration restrictionist idea and maybe some social conservatism, you know, could actually be a major game changer in the politics of California if somebody was to form their own independent party. But of course, everybody in California these days seem to be a liberal idiot. So I don't know if anybody would actually do it.
As far as the alt-right goes, you said the main thing you dislike about the right wing is white conservatives who support police officers in that sense. Do you think white people are rational for being opposed to a demographic dispossession?
Yes. I mean, I don't know why this is even, you know, brought up as being a bad thing by the media. I mean, of course people are going to feel a certain type of way if their community is being invaded by another race that's not theirs. I mean, for example, all these people who are getting butthurt because Hungary is throwing immigrants out the country. It's like, dude, Hungary is not like the U.S. It's not a multicultural country. It's been like 99% white since like forever. And you know, immigrants don't have a right to citizenship. That right is only granted by the country that they're in, which can and will, if the government feels like it, can be revoked at any time. Why is this so controversial to some people? I mean, no offense, but that should be like common sense, unless you're a soft-hearted dumbass.
Yeah, completely. I was talking to someone who's sympathetic to, say, European nationalism, and they had an interesting point. They said that black people in America have a right to live here, and they're an organic component of this nation, but he views Africans coming into Europe as basically illegal aliens, and they should be deported. Do you basically agree with that?
Yes, basically, yeah. I mean, yeah. Like I've said, you know, African migrants shouldn't be coming into France. France has never really been a multicultural nation. For thousands of years, it was French. And there's no obligation, nor any legal, there's no legal obligation for the French to keep African migrants. Their citizenship can be terminated at any time because they weren't born there. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it's totally rational. And I'm sure you're familiar with Norman Mailer's plan of breaking up New York City. And what was happening in New York at the time is black people were upset and angry about police brutality. And the whites in New York City, they were angry and pissed off about their schools changing because of busing. And the white schools all became, in New York, they became like black and Puerto Rican. And the whites had to move to the suburbs, and they were unhappy about that. So Norman Mailer, today this is, the left would obviously be opposed to that. But back then, Norman Mailer was an icon of the left. He proposed breaking up New York City into this kind of decentralized borough system where each neighborhood would have its own sovereignty. So it would address both black concerns and white concerns. Do you think that's a... does that make sense to you?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, like I said, I've read Bill Kaufman, so I know about Norman Mailer, but... yeah, that makes sense. You know, to me, why should New York City be a part of upstate New York? The people have basically nothing in common. I mean, upstate New York is filled with conservative farmers, while New York City is filled with, you know, latte-drinking liberal hipsters.
Well, I think he did support a secession of New York City, but I'm talking about his proposal to break up New York's... so that each neighborhood would have control over both its schools and its police?
Yeah, you know, I think that was a great idea. It's too bad he wasn't elected mayor. He should have been.
We are at the end of the show. Adventure Kid Cartrell Payne, it's been a great show. Thanks for being on.
Thank you.